HarperCollins and Harper Audio present Dead Reckoning, the story of how Johnny Mitchell and his fighter pilots took on Admiral Yamamoto and avenged Pearl Harbor. By Dick Lair. Read by Will Dameron. A note before we begin. For a cast of characters and a selected bibliography, don't forget to download the accompanying enhancement PDF from your audiobook provider, or go directly to www.harpercollins.com/audio/dead reckoning. Prologue. The Day. The first one appeared from the clear blue sky early on a Sunday morning, out of nowhere, it seemed, as sailors, soldiers, and civilians aboard ships, at airfields, in bunkhouses, and in bungalows were just waking up, some shaving, others showering, still others already sipping coffee in the mess halls where they gathered for breakfast, many nursing hangovers after a night spent socializing on shore leave or at the base itself. Indeed, at Wheeler Field, some were still going strong, wearing tuxedos and stumbling out of the officers' club at 7:51 a.m. into the bright light of day, laughing and carrying on after their all-night party. These men dismissed the hum of engines in the sky, assuming that Navy planes were performing maneuvers, and they likely felt sorry for the pilots having to fly at the crack of dawn, on God's day, no less, while most of the thousands of men and women assigned to Pearl Harbor were off duty. But as the hum grew louder, some of the men in their tuxes realized the engine noise did not sound quite right, different from their Navy planes, and in that moment, the casual mood turned dark. As the planes closed in, the rising sun insignias on their wings were revealed, and in the next seconds, a wave of Japanese dive bombers opened fire, strafing and dropping their payload. The officers in tuxedos, festive seconds before, ran for their lives, just as Americans stationed all around the Hawaiian island of Oahu did, as the shock and awe at Wheeler Field were repeated in the next 9 minutes at other airfields and naval stations, and then extended to the sprawling U.S. Pacific Fleet, moored at Pearl Harbor. It was a surprise naval aerial assault involving 183 Japanese attack planes and bombers loaded with armor-piercing bombs, shallow water torpedoes, and machine guns, all of which, in a flash, found targets on the ground and in the harbor. Bombs whistled to earth, sending up columns of oily black smoke from the hangars they flattened and the rows and rows of U.S. fighter planes they wrecked, while men raced outside, dazed and wild-eyed, pulling on pants, shirts, or a bath towel, dodging ear-shattering explosions, bullets, and shrapnel, some reaching safety, others not, their bodies bludgeoned by the blasts and bullets. At the mess hall at Hickam Field, a bomb plummeting through the roof exploded, killing some 35 men who only had thoughts about what to eat for breakfast on their minds. At 7:55 a.m., the Nevada ship's band was readying to play the Star-Spangled Banner, when two Japanese planes strafed the deck and shredded an American flag, just as an officer at the Ford Island Command Center at 7:58 a.m. frantically typed what became one of the most famous radio dispatches ever. Air raid, Pearl Harbor. This is not a drill. At the same moment, an ensign using binoculars aboard the battleship Arizona stared at Japanese planes, unimpededly dropping one bomb after another onto Ford Island, before he broke to sound the ship's three-blast alarm signaling an air raid, a howling siren that made its way throughout the 600-foot-long destroyer. Men on other ship decks, too, gaped at the aerial savaging of airfields until something else caught their eyes. Slender black masses in the waters below, racing toward them, which
sample complete. Ready to continue?